This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. DGS 404 every Tuesday at 4. We do the think tank. Today we have Kurt Barr and the host of Donnybrook, who's evidently out clubbing or something.
He's Donnybrooking.
Yeah, he's hanging with Charlie Brennan and...
Oh.
Yeah, who knows?
I'm nobbing.
You're probably East Side. Kurt Barr, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
See what happens when you're not on time.
Wouldn't it be great if they were?
Oh, my gosh.
I started saying PTs. That hasn't been open for 30 years.
Text from tells you the last Larry time I was Flint's East Side. Place.
Brennan, we got to get going. I'm late for the DGS. Get off the stage. Are you excited about the election? Are you dreading it? Is it both? I mean...
Oh, it's both and.
Yeah. I mean,
the election day is the culmination of a year's worth of work for the election authority. And so in that, we're super excited. And you know, we kind of care about elections, electoral process, and the chance for the voters to get to decide, you know, who their leaders are for the next 2 years.
Exciting.
But it's also something to dread because it's a massive event.
Yeah.
You know, election day, you know, you've got, well, in the entire state, millions of people coming to vote on one day. It's a big deal.
What do you worry about going wrong? When things go wrong in an election, typically what buckets do they fall in?
So for me, for this time around, my biggest concern is just long lines. That we're no longer in this COVID era where people are absentee voting early. They may or may not come in those 2 weeks of early voting that we have in Missouri. And so they're going to show up on election day. And depending on which the precinct, which polling place, my biggest concern is just a really long line. Now, we can handle that. You know, we can, you know, we've planned for that. So I think I have enough judges in each polling place to handle that. But that's my biggest concern is inconvenience. But the other, on top of that, is some people will show up, they'll see a line and they'll go, nah, maybe not.
Mm.
And then they'll go away. And then you get this, oh, I would have voted, but I saw a line.
Oh, you should have seen the line.
And so that's my concern is people going, that barrier is just too high.
What is what goes right? Like, what would you say? Like, here's the perfect day for voter turnout. Is it weather dependent? Is that the biggest thing?
Weather definitely plays a factor in whether or not people show up to vote. I mean, there's a core number of people, and generally they're elderly, who they're going to vote every single election.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, 10-15% of the population who's hardcore going to vote every election.
Why do you think the other generations took it more seriously?
I think that's part of it. Also, I mean, they paid a lifetime worth of paying taxes.
Yeah.
But I also just think part of it is, you know, when you're younger, you've got family, career, you've got all of these things, you know, competing for your time. Whereas after you've, you know, retired, gotten to that point in life, well, you're like, okay, I have the time to do this civic duty. And mm-hmm. so I think that is a big part of it. They have, you know, they don't have kids pulling at them. They don't have a boss yelling at them. They can take the time to go and vote.
How different are election procedures from like St. Charles County, St. Louis County, St. Louis City? Are they very different?
So the law is the same for everywhere. The biggest difference between the county city and St. Charles is this vote anywhere thing. So St. Louis City, St. Louis County, they have a different vendor and they do print on demand. So you can go to whichever polling place and you can vote there. But for St. Charles County residents and the rest of Missouri, you have to vote at your polling place for your precinct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest difference in how things are done.
And how does it work for you, like in St. Charles County? You show up, you get your little thing, you fill in the little dots, mm-hmm. you put it into the machine. Mm-hmm. Then what happens?
So that little machine is counting the ballot at the polling place. And then at the end of the night, the election judges take all the voted ballots, they box them up, seal them up, and bring them back to my office. And then that machine has a thumb drive in it. And that thumb drive has the results for that precinct. So they bring that thumb drive back to my office. And then my office has this air-gapped laptop computer that we break out just for election night. And then we upload the we upload the thumb drives for all the 104 polling places that we have, and then consolidate that information. And then we then, you know, to use a different computer to take that information and put it on the website, say, hey, okay, here is the election results. And we do that throughout the night until mm-hmm. we are done tallying the entire precinct or the entire county. And we say, okay, here is St. Charles County's results. And then we go into the Secretary of State's portal and we hand type in the number of votes for governor and hand type in the number of votes for a U.S. senator. And then that gets added to the Secretary of State's unofficial totals that he reports election night.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool to hear that behind the scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. For people, because I know you've gone through a little bit of this with sour grapes, when people are like, oh, rigged or this blah, blah, blah. Are you confident that if they were honest brokers and they followed you around the process, they would be confident in the voting?
Yes. And because I've had people who were questioning the process, and sometimes they'd come and work for me, and all but one person has said, okay, I now feel comfortable with this process. I now see the checks and balances. I see how we do the auditing. I see how we do the hand counting after the election. I see all of this, and now I feel comfortable with the process.
If Kurt Barr was a bad guy, mm-hmm. could you cheat and get away with it?
You've asked me this question once before, and I'll give you the same answer. No, I really couldn't. Could I cheat? Yes. It's the getting away with it that I couldn't do. And that's the thing about the process is there are so many different levels of checks and balances that I'm not smart enough to cheat and get away with it.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. You're able to commit the crime but not able to bring it to fruition.
Which has been basically the story we've heard from everywhere, right? That's what Raffensperger said in Georgia mm-hmm. and other places. They've all basically said, sure, there are ways to mess with things, but you're going to get caught.
Right, right.
If we do have good weather, if there's not some catastrophe that unforeseen, mm-hmm. The way the election is shaping up, are you expecting a good turnout?
So typically a presidential election, we see about 75% of the registered voters. And St. Charles County just hit 300,000 registered voters for the first time, which is super cool for us. So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of people showing up election day, which is why I try to remind people, hey, we now have 2 weeks of no excuse in-person voting. Come to my office, come mm-hmm. to the satellite vote center, and go ahead and vote before election day to avoid those lines. And I know, you know, St. Louis County, St. Louis City, they do vote centers as well. So, you know, each jurisdiction has that option. So voters just need to know where those vote centers are, you know, for the 2 weeks before mm-hmm. an election so they can avoid the lines on election day.
Kurt, is it too late for people to volunteer to be election judges at this point?
It is not too late. I know that St. Louis City, St. Louis County, they're still looking for Republican judges. That's mm-hmm. always their need. St. Charles County, we're doing pretty good right now. So I don't have this great need where I'm like, hey, please sign up. Now, that being said, I don't have a lot of judges to lose. So we're still working on training our election judges. But, you know, if a judge can't be used this election, well, we've got an election coming up in April, and I'm going to lose. I have a lot of my judges who are like, they've got one more election. They're going to work this presidential election, and then they're going to quit on me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to have a massive drop in my election judges for next year. And so I'm still needing people to sign up because I may need them in the April election next year.
And how does that work? Is it like an equal amount Democrats and Republicans watching each election?
Yeah, Missouri law, we have to have equal number of Republicans, Democrats for each polling place.
Okay.
And that's just the way we do it. Some states, you have to have one of each, and then you can just have extra people.
Okay.
But Missouri, it's an equal number in both states.
Does it ever get combative? Like, is it, hey, that's not what that guy voted, and you, we're going to take this to Kurt Barr?
Not like that, no. There are times where, you know, people will be outside electioneering and they'll get a little cantankerous.
Yep.
And then I'll get a phone call. I have to drive out to a polling place. Hey, guys, calm down. You know, you're not going to win the election by being rude outside a polling place.
Yeah.
But as far as my election judges, honestly, they work really well together.
That's good.
And most of the time they're like, hey, you know, we got this great team and we want to work with so-and-so. Like me and Sally, we got to be together again because, you know, we just work great together. And so, you know, most of the time my election judges love each other. We don't have, you know, fights, which is great.
What kind of stuff can you do and can't you do outside at an election for electioneering kind of stuff?
So there is in Missouri this buffer of 25 feet from the door the voters use. And so within that 25 feet, you can't do anything. Outside that 25 feet, you can put up your signs, you can have your flyers, you can, you know hand flyers to voters.
So you can talk to people?
You can talk to people, absolutely. And so outside 25 feet, you can do anything that the First Amendment allows you to do.
Can you do the giveaway stuff? Hey, here's some water. Hey.
So the answer is yes and no. You cannot bribe a voter to vote for a certain candidate. Mm-hmm. But if you just have a station where you're just handing everybody a water, that is acceptable. If you're handing a station, if you give everybody water who, you know, gives you a thumbs up, they voted for a certain candidate, that's not okay. Acceptable.
Yeah. Have you had to personally become less public with your politics, or is that not a thing?
I have definitely used less partisan rhetoric in my talks, primarily because I do need to have an equal number of Democrats as Republicans at all my polling places. And elections are very much run in a bipartisan manner. Half of my staff is Democratic. And so I can't go around, you know, irritating half my staff on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And also, you know, within the Election Authority office, we've become very nonpartisan. We have a technical job that we need to do. And we care about voting. We care about the democratic process. But, you know, we care a little bit less about does so-and-so win or not? Does this pass or not? We just want to make sure that it passes at a high enough level that we don't have a recount. That's, yeah. You know, that's kind of what we are hoping for. We want people to show up to vote. We want there to be a high turnout. So that's what, you know, that's what we want. And so, yeah, my rhetoric has definitely decreased. Now, I'm still a Republican and I still vote for, you know, the Republican candidates, but you know, I'm not out there going, hey, this side is right and this side is wrong.
Yeah. If you were to move on to another job, what would you tell your replacement? What sort of advice would you give?
That is a great question.
Duck.
honestly, the first thing I would tell them is, okay, here is your staff. Here are their strengths, their weaknesses. Here's your team that you have. Because quite honestly, you know, the director of elections is just one person, and the staff is the one running the office, and they need to know, like, you know, who has their back and who's, you know, taking care of the job. But the next thing that I have recently learned that's so important is that while the process has these checks, these balances, and all this, making sure the public is aware of that, having that transparency of the process is crucially important. Because when I talk to people and I say, hey, you know, we have these audits, that people are like, oh, that's great. I thought we should have those audits. But people don't know about that. So for the director to be a public information officer and tell the public, hey, here are the dates. Here's when we're doing the public test. Here's when we're doing the audits. And yes, you're allowed to come as a member of the public and watch all of these things so that you can see that the process is on the up and up.
Being involved in this, has it made you more confident in the national election?
It has, and for an interesting reason, I get to go to some of these national conferences with election authorities from all over the country.
Man, I bet those are parties.
And they're fun. They are a little bit nerdy. However, again, there's people who are appointed, there's people who are elected, there's people of all parties, and you know, everybody's like, we want good elections. Here's our struggles. Here's our problems. We want this high turnout. We want the people to trust the outcome of the election. You know, there isn't little conferences where we're like, oh, here's how we rigged the system. That doesn't happen. And talking to people, you know, they want the signature verification to be good and to be correct and to be thorough, you know. And so that gives me a lot more confidence than I once had before. Yeah. I got into this process, because, you know, talking to, you know, election officials across the state and across the country, you know, we just want the election to be run right. And the will of the voter is as it, you know, it should be the majority's opinion. But we just want to make sure that that's captured correctly election day.
So the only political question I'll ask you, having all this knowledge and experience now, when you hear Donald Trump and J.D. Vance still saying that the election in 2020 was rigged or stolen, does it make you more uncomfortable than it would have 4 years ago, now that you have all this experience?
I mean, it's been an uncomfortable thing for the last 4 years. You know, there has been a large group of people who are like, hey, the we know as a statement of faith that the election was stolen, that this is rigged, that this is wrong. But at every time where, you know, a group or says we have this proof, you know, every time they've gone to the court, you know, the proof hasn't been there. You know, the recounts in Arizona, Maricopa County, have shown that the number of ballots counted and the result was correct. You can say, okay, well, in some states like in Georgia and Pennsylvania, they changed the rules because of COVID right before the election, and that's unfair. And you can make that argument, but it was unfair for both sides. Now, I do think that not changing the rules right before an election is just a good idea.
I agree with that too.
You know, but talking to election officials from Georgia and from Arizona and hearing their side of the story, yeah, it is unfortunate that we've had this narrative for 4 years that the election was stolen.
Yeah. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
It really was. I appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 425. You want some fun facts?
Yes.
Let's go! Within 50 years, the earliest known reference to the Mile High Club.
Well, we haven't been flying for that long,
right.
So...
I don't know, 1985.
I was going to say 1965.
I'm going to go crazy and say like 1850 because of mountains.
1785.
Andrew was right.
How could that be possible?
Just 2 years after the first successful balloon ascent.
Oh, I forgot about balloons.
We're a bunch of freaks.
Hope that was a big basket.
Damn, brother.
The guy flying the balloon is like, this is awkward.
So if you look to your left, oh my God.
I'll just look out the window.
Yeah. Looking at the peaks, looking at the peaks.
They didn't tell me this is why they wanted it. I thought they were enthused about air travel.
Didn't quite land, did it?
Nah, I tried.
The land speed record for a tortoise is 0.63 miles per hour. It happened at an amusement park in England in 2014.
Why would they measure that?
I don't know. When Diet Coke debuted in 1982, it was the first time Coca-Cola ever used the word Coke in any of its products.
Ah.
Do you know that used to have cocaine in it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been a hell of a drink.
No kidding. Only 10% of our laughter is in response to a joke. The rest is just a response to social cues in awkward situations.
Huh.
No, I feel like I laugh at funny stuff. Right?
Yeah, 10% of the time. Mm. Well, I mean, but we make jokes for a living.
I say we probably have more legit laughs than the average bear.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy this is what we do?
Yeah.
Isn't it weird?
It's the best.
Like I'll go home tonight, put on the baseball game. Pull out my notebook, start all over again, and be like, oh, man, back to the salt mines. And I'll be like, hey, anyone ever notice how much Josh Hawley looks like Woody from
Toy
Story?
Gotta carry this burden.
Man, I already did the Bissinger's bag thing. I can't go back to that.
Got nothing.
More poop in the bag.
Got nothing. Seriously, he looks like Woody. He's built like Woody.
They do kind of look alike, yeah.
Like when he was running on January 6th, it looks like when Woody was, you know, floppa, floppa, floppa.
Yeah, there's a snake in my boot.
There's a snake in my boot.
Why do his elbows move like that?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.